Hey, before we get started with this week's episode, I just want to give you a quick announcement. This is Deidre, and I am here to tell you that we have something brand new and exciting. And in case you haven't heard, I'm going to let Megan share with you how you can join our Patreon community and why you should.
Yeah, we just started our Dauntless Grace community, and it's through Patreon. And by joining us, you are working with us to support our mission. You can access exclusive content like behind the scenes videos that, are just mine and Deidre's faces with some special guests, plus bonus content from a lot of our really, really special guests. You can join a vibrant community and enjoy special perks like retreat discount pricing. So head on over to dauntlessgrace.org/community to find out more.
And there's more than just that. So if you didn't hear, you should go check out that link that she is telling you about because we also have monthly coffee and chat calls where we talk Enneagram. And for the next level up, quarterly co group calls with therapists. So I'm telling you, this is a really cool community to be part of, and you don't want to miss this opportunity.
Dauntlessgrace.org/community.
Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Megan. And today we have returning for the, I want to say third time, fourth time, third time. We've talked about you. So let's call it the fourth episode about Tammy Sullenberger, who is one of our favorite famous therapists. Her face just lit up when I said famous, by the way, because she's like, no. And I don't have her official bio in front of me, but we will definitely link the other episodes where we've had her on. And you can find more about her at TammySullenberger.com, I want to say. She's the author and podcast host of The One Inside, and she's an IFS clinical therapist. So welcome back, Tammy.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here. Yes, my three is like, yes, I'm famous. Isn't that funny? My three parts think that's hilarious.
We found you by a podcast search, typing in IFS and Enneagram. So I think anytime anyone gets found based on a Google search, they're famous. Like,
period. Okay. Good. 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 Good.
I mean, you were at the top of the list, so you had enough hits that there you were. It doesn't matter. You're famous to us because we love
you. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys are famous to me. So, yeah.
Well, you are definitely famous to our listeners because we had people sign up for our last retreat who weren't going to come until they found out you were coming. So big draw.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, I'm not sure what we're talking about. We're talking about today, but I cannot say, like, I actually was like, I'm excited to see you guys today. I'm excited to hang out. And I had another part that was thinking, ooh, I wonder when they're going to do another retreat, because it was just an amazing experience. Like, personally, it was amazing. Professionally, it was super fun to work with the both of you. But I found that I was journaling a lot, and I was really like we just talked about, like, I could hear you guys talk about the Enneagram, and I even know about IFS. Like, we could hear this material over and over and over, and it's always going to hit us differently. And I loved just what, some of the stuff that came up for me, during the retreat. Like, it was a beautiful personal experience. So thank you. Thank you for that.
I went totally natural and not like we paid you at all.
Shh, we're not paying her.
Right. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Wait, I thought you were going to Venmo me $5,000.
Oh, that'd be funny.
I wanted to say thank you because I kind of, so I don't know if I admitted this to you that weekend, but there was, you were teaching on IFS and you're like, would anybody like to role play? So I'm just like, yeah, me, because I'm the good student that likes, impromptu improvisation, like as an actor. Yes, I'll do that. I'm thinking actually role play. What ended up happening, dear listeners, is that I sat in front of a living room full of people with my eyes closed, tears strolling down my face while you were actually therapizing me. So that was fun, but it actually was really meaningful and really good. I don't think I realized that's what I was saying yes to, but it was fine. Totally fine.
She thought she was getting a script.
Well, oh my word.
Okay. Not an actual script, like role playing though. Like, okay, like if this was a part that you were working with, this might be something I would say, and we might ask these questions, more like that. But you were just like, no, here we are. We're just going into this. And I'm just very obedient. And I was like, yes, ma'am, I'm shutting my eyes and I'm going with you.
Oh, well, so I have two parts to come up. One is like, well, I'm a three. So yeah, we're gonna go deep and go fast. And we're not gonna pretend and we're not gonna fake role play. No way. I don't even want to do that like in a classroom setting. Like, no, we're gonna go for it. And then I have another part that's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Oh gosh, no. I'm
No.
totally there. I was
It
there.
was beautiful. I mean, it was beautiful. And I think that's the thing about IFS is not, we can talk about IFS, but really is about doing it and not having it done on us. It's kind of, that sounds weird, but like doing it, experiencing it is really the best way to learn it. And so, I mean, I can talk about it all the time and I love to talk about it, but really having given you that experience and you having that experience and have people see the experience is how they're going to learn and grow and heal.
Yeah,
I
it was
think that's really true because we've been like learning about it and theorizing about it. And when we implemented it in practice to the level that we do, which we call IFS informed since we're not IFS licensed, we hadn't seen it practiced. We'd only heard the theories and read the theories. And so that was really the first experience of watching someone with an IFS training go through it. And I think that was really invaluable. And since then, having heard Dick Schwartz do that, with the co-hosts of We Can Do Hard Things podcast, I think also was really cool because I could see a lot of the things that you said in what he was saying. Like clearly you learned from him, and there's like a good practice and really good questions to focus on that
Yeah.
without having watched that ourselves and experienced that, I'm not sure we would have ever known just by learning the information. So
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, when you learn IFS, that's how you learn it. So it's not just, when I learned it as a therapist. So I was a therapist for I don't know, I'm bad with time, but like 10, 15 years before I learned IFS. And I learned it from Dick initially. And that's what like he would teach it. He would sort of teach the principles. And then we were doing it. Like we were doing it ourselves in the group and we were watching him do it. I mean, it was definitely doing it and experiencing it, not just a head, just sort of learning about it, which is different than other modalities, like how you learn other therapy modality and how I learned, cognitive behavioral therapy and DBT, which is what I did before, how I learned that, just learning, here's thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, change thoughts, change feelings, change behaviors. And here's the triangle and here's what you do. And that's what I did before. And that's what I would go to therapy myself personally. And it didn't really, I mean, and I don't want to like diss CBT. I know it works for other people. And it has worked in the
Wait.
past.
Can you stop and explain CBT and DBT just because I don't know what DBT is?
Sure. So cognitive behavioral therapy, most people, I think it's kind of going out. Like I don't think that that's a super prominent model anymore, but at one point it was a prominent therapy model. And CBT says if we change our thoughts, then we would change our behavior. And so if you picture a triangle and thoughts, behavior, feelings at each end of the triangle, and then if I have the thought, if I have the thought, I'm worthless, then I'm going to have feelings that go along with that. And then I'm going to have behaviors that go along with that. So if I'm worthless, then I'm going to feel shame. And then I'm going to drink a bottle of whiskey because I'm worthless, like soup. So then how do I stop drinking whiskey? Well, I change my thought. I'm worthwhile. I'm oversimplifying this. I'm worthwhile. And then maybe I feel better. And then maybe I, eat a kale salad. And so again, oversimplifying this tremendously, but so that's kind of the idea. Change my beliefs. IFS, we could still do, we could use that. Like we could use that information, but I could use it as a part. A part of me believes I'm worthless. And when that part's driving the bus, then I've got other parts that feel shame. And then I have other parts that feel like, okay, well, let's drink whiskey and that's going to help. So I can kind of use CBT, but I use it in a very different way. And I think a way that actually we experience, I experience a different experience. I experience relief with that. I'm always pointing to my heart because there's more of a relief that happens versus just a head, like I just need to work really hard to think differently.
Yeah. And one of the things that I feel like is hard about CBT is to get to the thought you're dealing, well, cognitively, which is where the seat comes from, but we don't develop cognitive beliefs about ourselves when they develop. There, it's the way we are sensing ourselves in safety and security and in belonging, and, you know, like way before we have language to have a cognitive developed thought around it. So IFS gets us to those parts that maybe didn't think it all the way through and already have, you know, these burden beliefs. And I think, so I think, like you said, you can still kind of apply it then, but you're applying it to the deeper part of like where that image about myself or that narrative about myself, that belief that was burden began, rather than later when I can find the words to figure out what I want to try to say about it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I love that. Because we're sort of, you know, can I work with younger parts of myself that didn't even have that? So that's going to be felt sense in my body somewhere, right? That's not going to be a full cognition. Am I not even, if I'm not, right, I'm a three. So I don't know that I'm super in touch with the thought anyways. All I know is I've got a bunch of feelings. Or I don't, and I'm just very busy. No feelings, just busy. So I couldn't tell you what my thought, right? I'm just busy.
I have a slight rant against Christianity here for a minute. And I'm a Christian and I grew up in a Christian household. But, you know, so often Christians are like, don't go the way the world is going. You know, it's all about the word. It's about the word. But we can see trends in the way that we teach and preach and stuff based on things. And I would say I grew up in an environment, evangelical Christian, especially like with some of the faith movement that was in the 70s and 80s, that was very cognitive. It's CBT based. It's like they took scripture, but they applied it to, you know, that's not the truth of what God says about you. So we have to replace that truth, you know, with, or that lie with the truth from God's word. Again, not necessarily a bad thing, especially when those truths are good things for us to believe, but we kept combating it here. And I'm like, we can't just apply scriptures like a bandaid across our prefrontal cortex and believe that that magically makes us feel loved and feel worthy. Oh, and I was just talking to someone today that was talking about how her pastors are just so anti-emotions, like your emotions lie to you and you can't trust them and all this. And she's saying, I just don't think that's right. I'm like, no, you're talking to the choir here. No, that's not right. But yeah.
I love that because there is truth that we exist in a culture and church, in an American church, right? I don't think this is all over church, but sort of like Western church exists in a culture, and that is changing, right? There is change that, like, it's not just I think a certain way, or I just need to think that God loves me and has a wonderful plan for my life. Like, yeah, that's great, but I think there is some shifting in what does that look like and how do I experience that differently, not just a head knowledge, but an experience, you know, what is that experience like for me if I really believe that, if I embody that, not just believe it.
Okay, so what is DBT?
DBT is a type of cognitive behavioral therapy. It's called dialectical behavioral therapy. Sure. And what a dialectical is, that's not a right word, is holding two things at the same time, like black and white thinking. So DBT was started by this woman named Marsha Linehan in Washington State to treat basically like borderline personality disorder type clients that are in and out of the hospital. And so it was the idea that both like two things can be true at the same time. So we in IFS, we'd call those polarizations. So I could love you, I could hate you, I could love you and want to leave you. Like that is hard to hold both. That's hard for most of us to hold both of those things. So DBT is a lot of skills. Now it's changed since I was trained in it, but there was a skills manual. And so basically what DBT does is it teaches basic like emotional regulation skills, like things that we really should all learn in high school, but we don't. Like, how do I regulate my emotions? How do I be more mindful? Like a lot of mindfulness practices. How do I relate to others? Relationship effective. I'm pulling this out now. I haven't done this in a long time. Relationship effectiveness. And what I loved about that was there was a thing that was called a three-legged stool. And like I can think about like, if we're having a relationship or we're having like a conflict, then I want to think about our relationship. And I want to think about the goal. And I want to think about, was it the effectiveness? I'm missing the third one. But the idea is like, is is being thoughtful and mindful about how I do relationships, right? Like it's almost kind of like a learning of how do I do relationships and how to talk to people and how to ask for what I want. And real kind of simple, basic, but things that most of us aren't taught. And so there is mindfulness, emotional regulation, relationship effectiveness, and distress tolerance. So distress tolerance is instead of cutting myself or drinking the whiskey or eating the box of brownies, what do I need to do when I am in distress? When I am up, when there is upset here and I'm flooded, that's an IFS word, not a DBT word. If I'm flooded, then what is it that I do? In DBT, very behavioral. Here are things, hold ice. Right, hold ice, put your head under the water, go take a shower, go take a walk, the very behavior. So I think it's great. I think it has a lot of like, it teaches a lot, but it doesn't, those are protectors, right? So you're negotiating with protectors, right? The part of me that is struggling in a relationship, or the part of me that's dysregulated emotionally, or the part of me that's going for the brownies or the whiskey or the porn or whatever that is. Yeah, I can come up with a behavior plan, but that's not going to change that part. That part still is like, here's what I need to do when the exile is triggered.
Yeah. I like language you just used about negotiating with protectors.
Yeah.
Good. And yet important if the protector is going to harm us or someone else, right? So I think it's still really important to learn the coping skills to deal with those things that are getting, you know, that are triggering all these big firefighters. But I love that we're still just negotiating with the protectors. That's good.
I love it with life skills, right? Like kind of, we don't have like life, like how do we learn life skills? You know, so I think that I'm so immersed in therapy culture now and all my friends sort of all are self-helpy that I don't really realize that a lot of people don't, you know, they're not reading self-help books and journaling and talking about their feelings all day long. You know what I mean? What? And
why?
I don't understand that.
But why don't we teach these things in schools? Why is there not so many schools?
Some are. This is what I just came from, was this industry where we were selling professional development of social emotional learning. Yeah. So there are people who understand that this is vital and this is important, and let's get it in to preschools as soon as we can, in kindergarten and elementary school, and teaching these SEL lessons. The problem is that we live in such a divided nation that anything that is deemed political in any shape, way, or form. And unfortunately, somehow SEL became one of those buzzwords that some people think, oh no, that's not good. They're going to teach something that I don't like and I don't approve of and what's going in there, rather than it just being like, we're teaching people how to resolve conflict in a healthy manner. We're teaching people how to be responsible with their own belongings and with their bodies.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just went off on a little rant there, but.
Yeah, but that feels good to hear that, right? That there is some initiatives that.
Educators know it's important. Politicians and pundits don't always understand that, and they get in the way of what educators know is good.
Cool. So let's turn this back to you for a minute, Tammy, on the idea that, because we've been kind of talking to people in this series, like what was the thing that led you from doing therapy the way you've been doing it to connecting to a new tool like IFS, and like what that modality meant to you or why it was important at that time in your life?
Yeah. So I took a workshop that it was a child and adolescent workshop. And the woman that was leading it said something about this new therapy model that was really popular down in Boston. And so it was teaching people to be more curious. And so two things happened. One, as a three, I was like, well, I want to do the popular thing. Like, you know, what's popular? That's what I want to know what that is. So my parts heard popular and curious. And so I grabbed on, thankfully, to the more curious, the idea of being curious. And I thought, what if I'm not curious, right? I'm trying to change behavior, right? I'm trying to change and challenge and teach and analyze. That's what you do in cognitive behavioral and DBT, right? I'm changing and analyzing and thinking and challenging. But what if instead I was more curious? Like, what if I began, like if someone came into my office and they were anxious, what if I began to be more curious about, and I almost see, I can feel myself sit back a little bit. What if I was a little bit more curious about what's happening with this anxiety? And then I started thinking, well, what if I did that for myself instead of, you know, why am I eating? Why am I eating all this? Or why am I angry? Or why am I so busy? Or why am I so sad? What if I just began to be a little bit curious about what was happening in my life and for my system? And, you know, I didn't have that language then, but just that idea of being curious. And that really shifted things for me, because I thought, you know, I feel a lot of people talk about this, about being burned out and about not feeling as fulfilled, and just sort of like, just kind of, you're on this hamster wheel. And so I ended up doing a 1 week training with Dick in Cape Cod. And I had this experience where personally, where I don't really even know how we got there, but all of a sudden I'm sobbing about my mom. It was just me and my mom having when she was 16. It was just me and her. My dad was around, but I saw him like every other weekend. And it was just really me and my mom until I was about 10. And she married my stepdad, who's lovely. And they had my sister, who's also lovely. But I really lost my mom. And I didn't know that, but I felt it. You know what I mean? Like, I felt it, because what my protectors did was kind of did this with my mom, right? Like, hit puberty and then live my own life. And there was sort of this real disconnect and a lot of anger and a lot of, but I didn't feel that, right? It felt more just sort of disconnected and like I didn't care. And so what happened in this session, or this like 15 minute little role play, I'm putting in quotes, was this sort of sobbing of this grief of this sweet little, because my mom and I had a sweet relationship until I was 10, and this grief and sobbing of this loss of my mom. And then afterwards, I remember going back, and my husband at the time, my son was three, he's now 13, and he was three, and we were vacationing together down there. And I remember just being more open to him, to my husband, to, you know, more open, more loving. I felt more calm. I wasn't as reactive. Mm. I was like, what is this? Like, what is this? Right. I just bawled my eyes out about something that I didn't even know was there. And now I feel more connected to him. And we had like, you know, lovely, you know, lobster rolls and ice cream in Cape Cod. Yeah. And so then I started my own therapy and, you know, went to therapy, because I was like, I need, this is all here. Right. And it was like, wow. And I just, yeah. So that's what happened. That's the story.
Wow. And what does it look like as you've employed this in your, as a therapist, then what did you start seeing as a difference? If that makes sense.
With my clients, like when I started working with it. Yeah. So what I started to do was I really just started, and I would recommend this to people, whether they've had the training or whether there's IFS informed or IFS curious, that I just started talking about people's parts. Okay. So you come into therapy and you know, want to get rid of your anxiety. Okay. So there's a part of you that wants to get rid of your anxiety. And I'm curious about maybe the part of you that doesn't. And so let's just talk about, okay, there's a part of you that wants to stop drinking. Okay. There's a part of you that wants to stop drinking. Is there a part of you that doesn't? Because let's invite that one into the room too.
Yeah.
Because that's true. That's why we're all addicted to stuff, right? Because there's a part of me that wants to and part of me that doesn't want to. So I just started reframing in parts language. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, now I know that I didn't know what I was doing, but I just started doing that, right? I started thinking in parts. And then this idea that you're there also, right? So there's a part of you that wants to stop drinking, a part of you that wants to keep drinking, and then there's you. So how are you feeling towards those two parts? So there's three people in the room. It's not just the part that wants to stop drinking. There's you, yourself, who's curious and calm and compassionate and clear-minded and curious. And then there's the part that wants to stop drinking and the part that doesn't want to. So there's three. And so I think that was the thing that I just did over and over and over again, and just kind of noticed what happened. It was softer. It was slower. It was calmer. I was using less words. It was different. It was completely different.
Did you feel that your clients had more change? And maybe that's not the right word, but deeper change or something?
100%. 100%. Right. Because I mean, I could just sit and chit chat with people all day long. That's fine. That's easy. Right. I mean, I could do that all day long, and people feel better. They feel heard. They feel seen. They feel understood, you know, but you could do that with your hairdresser, or you could do that with your bartender, or you could do that with the nail salon, right? Or you could call your girlfriend. And so people don't know that, know this actually, but they want something different when they come to therapy. They don't want to just be, they want to be seen and heard and felt and understood for sure. But IFS gives them something deeper and longer lasting and life-changing. And so, yeah, I saw that with myself for sure. And with my clients over and over.
Yeah, that's good.
Are we looking at me like it's my turn to speak now? I'm just like watching and engaged and thinking, okay, I probably need a therapist.
Yeah, I've heard you say that a bunch of times.
Okay, Tammy.
Okay, I'm going to say this though. We don't want to go to a therapist that doesn't know Enneagram or IFS though at this point.
Right.
It's really hard to find someone just locally in the area that like has those two modalities. They either don't, you know, they're like Enneagram's just, that's not a clinical thing, or they're not IFS trained, you know?
Well, and I know myself so well that if they don't have a really good handle and maybe more of a handle than I do on those two things, then I'm going to walk in and be like, why am I paying you? I know more than you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear
you? My
parts.
Best friend knows more than you do.
Right. Right. I hear those parts.
I'm what we call IFS curious, I think.
Yeah. Well, it is humbling, right? It is humbling to go, because I remember when I started going to my therapist, her name is Tina. I still see her. I remember being like, I'm just here to like learn IFS. Like, I just want like consultation. And she was like, okay. And then I'd go into her office and just like sob the whole time. And she's like, so I'm not sure if we're doing like therapy or consultation. And I'm like, I think we're doing therapy. Because there's parts of me too that are like, I even, you know, then feel like I know, you know, I know this, but there is something really humbling about, and I'm not saying this in a way, I mean, I'm saying this for myself too, about being that vulnerable and saying like, I need help. And yeah, I know there's parts of me that know it, right? There's parts of me that know this really well, but that can I put that aside a little bit and really be open and get the help that I need?
Yeah.
Shut up. not to put a pin in this, but I want to circle back to when you were talking about inviting that self into the room too, like, or not inviting the parts to be with yourself. So like you have the part, you have this part, and then you have the self that is calm and curious and connected. And we've heard those C words, and it's someday I'm going to learn all eight of them, I promise, but I'm not now because I only ever remember four at a time. And I just, like, having that language for that has made such a difference for me in kind of checking myself in any given situation, because, you know, we can know like, oh, you need to be exuding the fruits of the spirit, or when you walk in and, you know, to be yourself, but not too much of yourself, and all the things that we're told all the time. It's like, but what does that mean? And so having that language to know, do I feel calm? Do I feel connected? Do I have a clear mind? Am I feeling compassionate towards myself and others? Am I curious about what's going on inside me and what other people? I really can know then when I'm in a self energy space to then engage with the people around me. And I don't have to feel like I'm too much or not enough. Hashtag Enneagram 4 props. So.
Yeah. Well, I love those are great cues or great, you know, just great tells. So those are ways to sort of have a tell of, and I would recommend, you know, I think for all Enneagram types, we have one or two of those C words that really resonate with us. So like, I don't actually really like clear-minded doesn't like whatever, that doesn't matter to me, but connected does. Right. Like it's sort of like if I feel connected or when I feel disconnected, like the feeling of disconnect can be triggering for me. Like that can bring up exiles for me. And so that's when I'm hyper aware of whether I'm connected or disconnected. And so when I'm disconnected, and if this helps me understand, you know, my son, he's 13, like I said, I could pick him up from school. We could be driving from school and I can ask him about like something about his day and he could roll his eyes at me. And all of a sudden I either feel enraged or ashamed or completely shut down. And I don't really understand why, but it's like this, it's a disconnection. It's like this, we're disconnected now. And so knowing that language, I can like, okay, the parts of me that come up, so that take over the bus, that drive the bus, they just come in and like hijack the bus so strong instantly when that happens. So now I know enough about my Enneagram and my system that when that happens, those parts come up because connection is so vitally important to me. Yeah. So connection and disconnected connection. And then what's really fun is, if you think about this based on your Enneagram type, is think about the parts of you that make sure that you have connection, like the managers, right? I have managers that go before me, that go ahead of me and say, okay, let me make sure I text Megan and Deidre to say like, hey, how are you guys doing? Let me make sure that I hook up with my friends. Let me make sure that I have fun plans every night. Like, let me make sure that I'm, you know, connecting with my partner several times a day. Like, let me make sure that I have connection opportunities. Those are my managers. Because connection is so important to me. And then my firefighters come in when that connection's broken. And I think we could do every single Enneagram type using that same idea of like, what's the C word that's so vitally important to me as this type? And then how do I my parts make sure that that happens? And what do my parts do when that doesn't happen?
Okay, I know we are like running out of time, but do you have that mapped out already? Or is this something you're just starting to think about? And I've heard you and Joan talk about this. So I know you've been thinking about it, but is it mapped out?
I think that we just talked about this the other day. I'm pulling up this. I don't know.
I've heard you guys talk about it in the past, and I know because I was listening for what you said about fours, and you might have recorded this a year or two ago. I don't even know now at this point, but I know you said like that creativity would be maybe that open C word for fours. And in my brain, I'm thinking, I get that. Like I can be in a more creative space when I'm operating in self-energy. But I also know that the biggest tell for me to know that I'm not is like when I'm not feeling calm or curious. So it's not, I feel like I can get really anxious and still get creative because I feel like that's just an easier door for me maybe, but it's that anxiety in a new space or it's defensiveness instead of curiosity. Yeah. So I'm just curious how you map those out.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember Joan and I don't think that there's like every type has a specific C word that like is line item to it. But I think that, I feel like Joan and I just had this conversation and I'm just having a hard time finding it like in my head but I don't know that it's connected to C word. I don't know that it's connected to C words, but I do think that it's this idea that, like for you, if that calmness is a tell, then, so maybe it's a C word, maybe it's not, but like, think about whatever it is for you that's a tell that you're in self energy or that you're, if that language doesn't, like for people that they're more themselves, like more connected or more embodied. And then like whatever that tell is, what that feels like, and then sort of consider what parts of them make sure that happens, like what parts of you make sure that you're calm, and then what happens when you're not calm, because then those other parts take over. So I think whatever that is, there can be this tell, and then we can map the parts before and after.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it relate to those higher? Yeah. Does it relate to those higher qualities? Like those, I think Joan calls them higher qualities. I've seen him call like the virtues of the Enneagram, those things.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, for me, it doesn't, because when I think about like honesty and like, you know, that doesn't really ring for me, where the connection really rings for me as like, is such a trigger point for me.
Yeah.
Okay. And the image though, right? It's like, so if I think about image and I think about like, you know, if I'm feeling ugly and frumpy and fat, what happens for me versus if I think like, oh, I look cute today. I mean, something so superficial, but it makes such a big difference as a three, like, or like a bad picture. It's so stupid and I hate it, but like it could wreck me and it's so stupid. But so not some stupid. Of the image stuff for me can definitely trigger, right? So then I can have parts that make sure that the image is okay and parts that react when they think it's not.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is a deep dive we need to take offline because I'm like super fascinated to find a correlation here now.
Love it.
And speaking of taking this offline, we're going to end our conversation with you here and put a pause on it. And then we're going to just take a few extra minutes with you if you've got like 10 more minutes and video something with you for our Patreon. So be sure to catch us there.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.